that kind of constitutes a good starting point and sets the tone for all the areas that we're going to be talking about, especially if you look at the mandate of the Financial Services Board. Go straight to the mandate. Our mandate, as I've said, is really to supervise and to enforce compliance with the laws that regulate financial institutions. The financial institutions that we talk about are the non-banking financial institutions who provide financial services to the public. And I'm going to skip the mission. I'm going to skip the mission and list, perhaps for the benefit of the committee, list the various acts that the Financial Services Board is responsible for. And I would like to do this in particular because I know that we earlier on, the National Treasurer did make reference to the fact that let us at least maybe look at all the various statutes, pieces of legislation that the Financial Services Board is responsible for. And without sounding too cryptic, but I'm just going to go through the acts, you know, one by one. The Financial Services Board is responsible for the Pension Funds Act, the Friendly Societies Act, the Financial Services Board Act, which is the act that established the Financial Services Board, the Financial Supervision of the Road Accident Fund Act, the Long-Term Insurance Act, the Short-Term Insurance Act, the Inspection of Financial Institutions Act, the Financial Institutions, which is about Protection of Funds Act, the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act, the Collective Investment Schemes Control Act, and the Securities Services Act, which has now become the Financial Markets Act, well, still in bill stage. Chair, that takes me to then start to discuss the various services that are regulated by the Financial Services Board. And we feel that it is appropriate to actually go to and to express before the committee the fact that the institutions that are regulated by the Financial Services Board invest and they manage consumer funds. Whilst they manage and invest in consumer funds, the institutions referred to, they don't function as trusts, so that those consumer funds are not treated as trust property in the way that trust property is treated and ring-fenced. The said institutions actually invest consumer funds and they deal in them, so that at the end of the day, a consumer in this case, we're talking about all of us here sitting in this room are all consumers of financial services of one nature or another. A consumer is left only with a claim from that particular institution that they've entrusted their funds to. And that brings about a high risk, a very high risk, and which then enlists the Financial Services Board to be a whole lot more circumspect and protective of the funds that are invested and managed by all these institutions. Can we go to that slide? This one. Like I've said already, the investment and management activities don't always take place under the umbrella of trusts. These take place under the umbrella of companies that own, so to speak, and invest in the funds that they deal in. Therefore, the general legislative framework and the specific legislative framework, and when I say the general, I would imagine that we're looking at the Companies Act per se and other general legislative framework. And specific would obviously refer to all the financial services legislations that are operative, that for reasons I've listed before. The general legislative framework must facilitate a regulatory regime that is very effective and that is very efficient in order to achieve those objects of financial regulation in the public interest. And at all relevant times, I must mention that the Financial Services Board is enlisted to act very much in the public interest. Going forward, Chair, when we looked at, for instance, the rationale for treating banks differently from the other non-bank financial services institutions, which is, for instance, the insurers, the pension funds, and the collective investment schemes, it was unclear to us, you know, the different treatment as to what motivated the different treatment, because these are prudential entities that manage other people's money as well, in the way that I've already set out. The financial services legislation as a rule requires, you know, the financial institutions to meet stricter regulations and stricter requirements than those provided for in the Companies Act. For instance, I would just like to mention that the Companies Act does not require a subsidiary to appoint an audit committee. The expectation in the Companies Act is that the subsidiary's activities in that regard would be reported under the holding company. Now, from a financial industry perspective, this is inappropriate for us, because in respect of an insurer, for instance, whose holding company is not also an insurer, the audit company for the holding company may very well not have the necessary expertise or the necessary experience that is required for purposes of reporting on the audit, from an audit perspective, on the financial activities of the insurer as such. It is therefore important that the Short-Term and Long-Term Insurance Act, they need to require, despite the provisions of the Companies Act, that each registered insurer must have its own audit committee, because if a subsidiary of a holding company who is not an insurer is an insurer, then you are sitting with a problem where you're not going to be able to get proper reporting from an audit perspective. The other specific area that I would like to just bring to the attention of the committee is that a financial institution is required to inform and obtain the approval of a regulator prior to entering into transactions of merger, you know, acquisitions, amalgamations, and all those things. Whereas the Companies Act it actually regulates the processes and procedures that must be complied with in respect of business rights to rescue. But once those activities are entered into, for instance, the amalgamation activities and for that matter, business rescue, are embarked upon, it is necessary for the financial institution to inform and secure the approval of the regulator, in this instance being the Financial Services Board.
Advocate Shumbi, what I would like you to do as you're coming through here is, while you're looking, as you say here, at that, can you just bring alongside that, because even in the expanded text, I don't see the bill, you know, the clauses in the bill that allude to that, you see, in the amendment bill. And you, just to take one of the points, you may say the Companies Act does not require a subsidiary to appoint an audit committee, the Act. What is it in the amendment bill per se? We're dealing, you know, that you're looking at. So that in the amendment bill, if you're saying, for example, that in the amendment bill itself, and then allude back, do you follow? If, for example, you were to say in the amendment bill we may have this, or we don't have this, whereas it had it there, do you follow?
Yes.
Because we're not really reviewing the Companies Act per se. We're looking at the amendment bill. So we're trying as far as possible to just allude back if we have to, but to look at the amendment bill.
Mm.
Because that's what we've got directly, and then just to link it back. So if you feel, well, fine, this is the amendment bill, but possibly the Act had it quite right, or whatever.
Thank you.
If you can just, I know you're very familiar with what you've written rather than myself, so I'm sure you'll be able to do that.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I will just now go straight to the specific amendments and the specific sections that we would like to discuss for the committee. But just now, just to clarify the one thing about, for instance, the audit committees, I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Advocate Ferreira here, just to talk through the audit committees. Then straight after, we will go straight to the specific sections.
I think if I may, all the examples of stricter requirements or different requirements that needs to pertain to the financial sector relates back to Section 5. And as you'll see, the Amendment Act as it stands brings in the Municipal Finance Management Act and said it was an error for not including it the first time around. And we want to argue that the financial services laws should also be included, because in our view it was also an oversight in not providing for it the first time. Section 5 of the Amendment Bill makes specific reference to listing requirements of an exchange. And an exchange is regulated by the Financial Services Board under the Securities Services Act. So for us, you know, it was unclear for us why listing requirements would be highlighted while not the other legislation managed or administered by the Financial Services Board. Okay, and if we can then sort of just jump specifically into Section 5, because I think a lot of the examples relate back to Section 5. And as we put forward in our submission, we do feel that financial sector legislation should be able to prevail over the Companies Act if there's a conflict. And what we've tried to do is to highlight some examples of where difficulties could arise. So if we look at Section 5, which provides for the Companies Act to override, and I think it's an interesting question that was asked before to say that surely our legislation stands on its own. Because of Section 5, it creates a difficulty. And one can argue it's a question of interpretation. Is it a specific act? Is it a general act? Is it a later act? Is it a newer act? And the rules of interpretation will eventually guide you in a specific direction. However, the courts need to drive you in that direction, which means that when we need to act quickly and swiftly to protect consumer funds and we want to go for a curatorship, we pushed back to the courts to first argue is our legislation, is it a higher standard? Does it prevail over the Companies Act or not? So I think for us, and maybe we've got a number of slides, but I think we'll rush through it, and maybe just take you specifically to the concerns. Audit committee is there. We found currently that we insist that an insurer appoints its own audit company, an audit committee. They argue, yes, we'll do so, but only until the Companies Act take effect. So at that point, we will insist that our holding company is the audit committee, because that act overrides yours. The same with the business rescue transaction. As we said before, we are aligning all our legislation and making legislative proposals to the Minister of Finance, which he will hopefully submit to Parliament once he's considered it, on business rescue, bringing it in line with that. But currently what we would want and what we have for judicial management currently on our legislation is to say, before a company puts itself into judicial management, and in this case, business rescue, which in future will be through a resolution of the company, not necessarily a court process, that in future we foresee the same argument as on audit committees to say, no, you cannot insist that we inform you upfront. And I think when we speak about Section 123, which follows, the concern will become more clearer. If we look at 133, that section specifically says that there's a moratorium on two things: legal proceedings, which includes enforcement action once a company has put itself into business rescue. The exclusions provided there does not assist the FSB when we need to take action. As my colleague explained, not all financial services institutions hold funds in a trust structure. And again, we can say, you know, it's a question of interpretation, etc., but I think our position is that the legislation needs to be very clear. Because currently the precise parameters of what constitutes legal proceedings and enforcement action isn't clear. So for instance, we have a insurer that primarily has long-term insurance products, which like retirement annuities, etc. It sees it's running into difficulties. The night before, it takes a resolution to put itself into business rescue. The next morning, we want to go for the curatorship to guard the assets, which actually belongs to the policyholders and not the company. It is not clear that we would be able to do that. The current wording would prevent us or push us into a long, protracted legal battle as to what and who prevails and what are the requirements that must be adhered to. So just to re-emphasize that the financial institutions that NonCo listed deal with other people's money, not their own or a shareholder's money that made an investment. This is your money and my money, my parents' money, our children's education money that we're talking about. So our argument is that 133 as it's written and the Amendment Act did not really address that concern. I think it more highlighted it even more, the risk that we are running. And I think our whole 133 and 116 are examples of where we think that the legislation emphasizes why we should have financial services legislation at least being able to override the Companies Act in certain specific instances. Because it currently creates an ambiguity, and as we said, our thinking is that we will be in legal battles the whole time. And remember, if you're in a legal, busy with litigation or exchanging lawyers' letters, you don't have control of the assets. And I think, as all of you have read in the newspapers, it's very, it's amazing how quickly funds can actually flow out of a company if they need to. So I think for us, it's being able to act swiftly, effectively to protect consumer funds. 116 is another example, for instance, and I think Sarge also highlighted this as one of these, where there's an amalgamation or merger. Currently, similar to the Banks Act, we require the approval of that transaction because you want to ensure that the person that acquires the insurer or the collective investment scheme actually is a person of substance, both in terms of fit and proper requirements, but also in terms of being able to step up the moment there's a shortfall in respect of capital requirements. And currently, it doesn't cater for the Financial Services Board and where we need to act. So I think it's important also for us to be able, in those instances, to be able to act correctly. And I think the difficulty is that, I think with Section 5 is to say that when two acts cannot be read together and there's a conflict of one overrides the other, it is a debate as to when can it be read together or not. Audit committee is an example. Business rescue proceedings is an example. Auditing requirements is an example. I'm sure that where you have a financial services, FSP, a financial services provider, that is an asset manager. Basically, you give your money to him, he goes off and invests it and into shares and into collective investment schemes, etc. Surely you would want that guy to audit his financials. You know, not say he's exempted from auditing because he's a sole shareholder of that company or the sole director of that company. So I think for us, our plea, and in terms of the documents that we submitted as well as this presentation, basically in a nutshell is to say, as the FSB, we feel that the Companies Act, as well as the Amendment Act, does not recognize that we have a specific legislative mandate and that we currently feel that we will not be able to fulfill that mandate. If tomorrow an insurer fails and we have to go to court, we can't institute a curatorship, etc., it's us that must answer to consumers. And if the legislation prevents us from doing so, there is a difficulty. So I think for us, our presentation today is basically to say we were hoping that the Companies Amendment Act would alleviate our difficulties, and it's unfortunate that we cannot say that. I think also the last comment that we have is in respect of the definition of securities, and I think it's notable, we're a regulator. We're not a policymaker or a government department. So we do not participate in cabinet processes and procedures and do not participate in those decisions. and we do understand our role, it is to give effect to government policy to the extent that it's been reflected in legislation. However, we only then see legislation the moment it is published for comment, like this amendment bill. And when we saw the amendment bill, we saw that the definition of securities have substantially changed from what it was before. And some of our regulated entities, like Strait and the JSE, has also made submissions on that. And we need to say that as the FSB, who needs to apply the Financial Markets Bill, which is currently Security Services Act, and how that will impact on dematerialized securities, how it's registered, how it's transferred, how does it impact on the provisions of the Companies Act, which we've now incorporated into the Financial Markets Bill, as the proposal, you know, in terms of aligning the two pieces of legislation going forward. We at the moment are at a loss as to what the implications would be, because we've basically had a few weeks to look at it, and there are definitely implications which we're not clear about, and we were not consulted at all in terms of the change of the definition. And yes, it's not like DTI would know that we were, you know, 100% aligning our legislation to these in terms of how share certificates is being issued or securities registers are held, etc. But it does create a huge problem for us going forward, because today we're in front of the committee, but as a regulator we haven't had sufficient time to assess what the implication of that definition change is. So that's our presentation, and I think just to as a final statement, saying that really all we want from the committee is to be able to empower us to do our jobs. And I think we try to highlight that, and I think that for us everything boils down to Section 5. Thanks.
Thank you. I just want to ask you a question, please, myself. When the Act came out, did you engage with the committee at that time?
No, we did not. We submitted comments on the bill through to the National Treasury, who is our executive authority. We didn't make presentations to the committee.
You made those presentations, or at least directly engaged with National Treasury? Yes, that's what I'm just clarifying. And then, so of course, National Treasury has got a minister. So I'm just clarifying that we've got new members ourselves on this committee, you see. So you then have the opportunity, I would hope, through National Treasury, of raising the same concerns you have raised here today. Because you then would have seen the Companies Act. It was signed in 2008, I think. I wasn't here. So I just want that quite clear. And then, so that was shared. And it is not my intention to do micromanagement of any department. It's not my purpose. It's not the committee's purpose. But I hope this was shared, the same concerns that you're now raising before the committee, you see.
Maybe just at that point in time, I was at the National Treasury, and I can assure you that those matters have been brought to the attention of DTI on numerous occasions.
That's the thing, you know, with all these changes, people shifting around, and then it's so elusive as to know what happened, you know. But in the end, look, there's a certain level of responsibility. I'd love to say I'm not taking responsibility for what the previous chair did, or vice versa, you know. Unfortunately, that's not the case. When we take on a mandate, we have to take all of the responsibilities, all of the good work, and all of the challenges that we meet when we take on a position, unfortunately or fortunately. But I am, as a matter of fact, I know of the work of the FSB, and I think they're doing a lot of valuable work. Thank you for sharing that with us. But I just want to make it clear that I hope you did engage directly with National Treasury and raise these concerns. So they would have been raised at the cabinet level. Thank you. Now, over to the committee. Honourable Alberts, Honourable Harris.
Thank you, Chair. I do find it a little bit disconcerting that these proposed amendments have not been reflected in the bill. Your work is very important, and you know, you have a very broad mandate, and you have various acts that you have to oversee. What I want to ask you is, those acts, you've listed a whole bunch of them that you need to oversee and manage. Do you regard all of those acts to be important enough to have precedence over the Companies Act, or just some of them? And which ones would they be? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, that was also my first question. The amendment you've proposed in what you call Section C1 of your submission, it refers to the Social Securities Act. I'm also wondering which of those acts you've listed on page 2 of your submission, the 11 of them there, are those all listed under that Security Services Act, or which ones are you trying to insert into Section 5, or would you like to see inserted into Section 5? Because there is a cost to having a long list of acts that override the Companies Act. It increases the burden on companies who have to analyze whether an issue is covered by the Companies Act or perhaps by some other act. I mean, right now we have, in the draft bill, we have 6, I think, acts that can override the Companies Act. If we suddenly turn that into, say, 26, that's a whole lot more burden put onto companies in terms of trying to understand a web of legislation. So there is an interest also to try and limit the number of acts that can override the Companies Act. And then my second question is your concern around Section 116. The way I see it, if you achieved your objectives in terms of Section 5, that would then mean that the Section 116 wouldn't be an issue anymore. Okay. Thank you, Chip.
Right. As Honourable September.
Chair, thank you. I just want to ask, in everything that you have raised, the intention of this bill, do you think that with your concerns that you are raising, and if you look at the purpose of why we're having this act, this bill, do you think it will measure up to the intention that it sets out to be?
Are there any other questions or comments from the committee? No. Over to the FSB. Before we hand over, I know, Advocate Chombe, we're referring at some point here to the trusts, etc. here, and the appropriate regulation to address the nature of financial services. The institutions regulated, invest and manage, and not treated as trusts. Can you just very briefly, in sort of one or two sentences, just explain what your concern is about this issue of trusts? And then also respond to the questions across there.
Thank you, Chair. maybe I'll start last with the last question and then work myself up. And then I'll leave the balance to my colleague, Advocate Ferreira. With regard to trust, the reason why we are raising the question of saying the financial institutions are not run in the same environment, for instance, as trusts are run, is because in a trust environment, you have the ability to have what is called trust property, which should be handled in terms of the Trust Property Control Act. And under those circumstances, you then are able to ring-fence property that is held in trust and treat it as property held in trust, as, you know, as such. In other words, you're not at large when dealing with that property. Yes, you deal with it as though it was your own as a trustee, but it is ring-fenced for purposes of it being identifiable and pertaining to the rightful owner, the beneficial owner, so to speak. Now, in financial institutions, you do not have that kind of protection of property. The consumer puts in their investment, and the investment is dealt with by the financial institution along with in its trade, and it literally gets into the pot, and the financial, all that the consumer has is really a claim in terms of a contract or an agreement or any governing document that governs the investment that the investor made. Now this becomes a big risk for consumers, because then what it means is that at any level at which the financial institution is unable to carry itself through and is unable to make good the undertakings and the expectations of the consumer, it means the investment is really in the hands of the financial institution, and it goes down with the financial institution should that institution go down. That's the concern. My colleague wants to
add. Just maybe to add to that, I think it sounds very strange, but for instance, if you make a contribution to your pension fund, it goes into a pool. And why it grows so quickly and fast is because of that pooling. And I think insurers work the same way, collective investment schemes work the same way, etc. And to an extent, the deposit also works in a certain way, in the same way, that it's because of the pooling of the funds and the way it's then invested that makes it actually grow faster. If you only have your 100 rand in your pocket and it's not sort of put together with 100 million other 1 rands, or 100 grand, so it doesn't grow as fast. So that's why financial services are structured in such a way that the pooling effect is essential. But that actually means that you can't go in and take out this rand. You get out a different rand the moment you claim against it.
Thank you, Chaleli. I want to move on, and maybe if I can start with Honorable September's question with regard to whether the required or the proposed changes and the concerns that we've raised will address the concerns that were sought to be addressed by the amendments. For one thing, what we are also looking at with regard to the concerns and the proposed amendments that we've put is the alignment of the financial services regulation with international standards, and to this end there's been discussions at G20 level where all the stringent requirements that are adopted at an international level are being considered, obviously with a view to adopting them for them to fit the South African environment, but by and large for them to talk to the international requirements that are required of financial institutions. So indeed that is the focus of some of the proposed amendments that the Financial Services Board is proposing. The other question related to whether all the acts that we listed, are they all intended to override the Companies Act? And I'm going to speak basically when I look at all of them, at all the financial service legislations that we listed here. They all have, except I would say, the only one that I can immediately accept is the financial supervision of the Road Accident Fund. But all of the other ones are, I would say, statutes that would need to override general provisions that are contained in the Companies Act. Because the financial supervision of the Road Accident Fund perhaps may very well have specific provisions, you know, that stand on their own. Whereas when we look at the general provisions that are contained in the Companies Act and you bump those against specific provisions that may need to be considered specifically in the financial services regulation environment, then I would say all of those acts, indeed except the one that that relates to the supervision of the RAF, all of them would have provisions that would need to override the base legislation, which would be the starting point, the Companies Act, so to speak. I'm going to leave the balance. My colleague, Advocate Ferreira, will deal with the balance, the other question that was raised.
I think maybe just to reiterate that we do want all the specific sectors regulated by the FSB to be able, that the legislation governing those sectors will override. And I think the principle is already recognised in the Companies Act as it stands now by recognising banks. Banks take deposits, so it's critical to allow their legislation to impose stricter requirements on banks because you need to safeguard those deposits. And I think all we are saying is that the legislation that we administer does exactly that. We need to be able to safeguard those deposits, be it in the form of a pension fund, be it in the form of a collective investment scheme or an insurance product. And I think the same rationale applies, and I think that's why, you know, for us in terms of the purpose of the, and the intent of today's of the amendment bill to correct omissions, references, etc., we want to argue that it's an omission that the financial sector legislation is not also mentioned in Section 5. Mr. Chairperson, if I may, just in defence of my Treasury colleagues, I think if you looked at their presentation this morning, all the issues that we have continuously brought to their attention, they have indeed engaged. So we have full confidence in our executive authority that they are sort of trying to support us in our plight. And I think maybe just to emphasise as well that if you look at, for instance, the Insurance Act, Long-Term Insurance Act, there's probably 60 references back to the Companies Act. And all of those is what we were saying, where we have to amend legislation now to align. Because business rescue is replacing judicial management, so those references need to be fixed, etc. And we are doing that. And by doing that, clearly saying we absolutely support the new regime that's being introduced in terms of the requirements of the Companies Act 2008. On the contrary, it makes it a lot more easier, simpler to understand, etc. But I think all we are saying that is we don't want to get into an argument with people if there's a conflict or not. We will want to be able to act when we need to make sure that we do our jobs.
Thank you very much. Just looking at those who did raise questions, I believe you were responded to adequately. So we'd like to thank the Financial Services Board for waiting so long and listening. I hope you will still stay on a bit, and also for the input. And I'd appreciate it if you would make closer reference if you had another opportunity just to...